From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made a couple of weeks ago in the pages of the New York Times with a story about the Trump administration and transgender Americans. I'll read from the Times story now. Quote, Trump's Department of Health and Human Services is considering an interpretation of Title IX, the federal civil rights law that bans sex discrimination in federally funded schools, that would define sex as either male or female, unchangeable, and determined by the genitals that a person is born with. This would defy the scientific and medical evidence embraced by major organizations like the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association. HHS is the primary agency working on the draft proposal, but other agencies, including the Departments of Education, Justice, and Labor, are expected to adopt it as well should the administration move forward with the change. It's not clear when that will be. Although the Times reports that HHS is preparing to formally present the new definition to the Justice Department before the end of this year, end quote. Well, yesterday on this program, State Senator Rich Funke said that many parents, himself included, are still concerned about the safety of their children who might end up in a locker room with a transgender individual. The Rochester Business Journal has apologized for running a recent cartoon that mocked transgender individuals. This hour, a conversation about the law. Yes, on the federal level, from the Times story, we're going to talk about GENDA, a piece of state legislation. We're going to talk about what changes might be coming and how the transgender community deals with conceptions and misconceptions. My guests this hour include Rowan Collins, Communications Director for the Out Alliance. Rowan, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Penny Sterling is a local storyteller. We just saw Penny a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Hi.
So, well, welcome back. Nice
thanks.
To have
Good
you.
To be here.
Thanks for being here. Amy Stevens is a member of the trans community. Amy, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you.
And Dr. Kate Greenberg is director of the gender health services at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. Dr. Greenberg, welcome back to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm going to start with Rowan on this, and let's do this. Let's talk a little bit about what we're hearing at the federal level. We're going to talk about what's happening at the state level. And in some ways, this is another opportunity for us to help just sort of talk about what misconceptions that the trans community continues to experience. And we don't want to make any assumptions. So it's a good chance just to sort of listen. But before we do any of that, let me read an email and you can help with this, Rowan. Dan writes to us and says, could you please clarify what people mean by the words gender and sex and try not to let the terms get conflated or used interchangeably? It's easy to do that accidentally. I think it's important because if we're not clear about the definitions of the words we're using, we can't reliably communicate with each other about anything remotely complex. This is a difficult topic for a lot of people, and failing to clearly say what we mean not only presents a social obstacle, but perhaps a legal one as well when you get into interpretation of laws. That's from Dan.
All right. Well, that's, I mean, I think a great place to start and very well said to Dan. So obviously what we start to deal with is the conflation of sex and gender, that folks see them as interchangeable words. And it makes sense that we see them as interchangeable because if you look at any, for the most part, any form that you're going to fill out in your day-to-day life, whether it's in a doctor's office, whether it's at the bank, whether it's signing up for a rewards card, very often you are asked to express what your gender is, or sometimes it says sex and you kind of get an M or F box and you just like tick the mark, and you'll see them used interchangeably so folks could understandably see that they would be the same thing. The way that we see gender and sex as separate is as follows. So when we talk about sex, we're talking about biological sex. We're looking at our biological aspects, and you can jump in on this, Dr. Greenberg, if I misstate this at all, but we're looking at our DNA, our chromosomes, our reproductive organs, perhaps aspects of the hormones that make us the bodies that we are. When we talk about gender, what we're looking at is our psychological sense of self. So this is who we know ourselves to be in a gendered way. And for a lot of people, those are congruent. They line up. The body that we're born with matches who we know ourselves to be. Maybe many of us have never even thought about it before, like right now. And for those folks, it's not even a consideration. However, for people in the transgender community, what happens is we start to think who I know myself to be, like really internally, and this very strong sense of who I am doesn't seem to fit the body that I am developing as a young person, as an adult. And that's where I see we see that difference there between sex and gender. So for a lot of the population, especially of this country, we've never had to think about sex and gender as separate because they have been so similar. But we do have to acknowledge the fact that the word sex and gender cannot be used interchangeably. And that is where it definitely gets muddy when it comes to legalities.
Dr. Greenberg, well said there. You want to add to it?
Very well said, as always. I think the other piece to point out that folks may not have thought about is the fact that while there's the M and the F boxes that you tick off, that those are neither biologically nor identity-wise, a binary phenomena. So one of my first reactions to the New York Times piece was just the fallacy behind even assuming that biology was static or binary or immutable. And so to make that statement ignores the identity and the experience of lots of intersex people. So people who have biology, who have genetics and body parts and hormonal states of being in their bodies that are neither fully male or fully female, that there's lots of people who exist in a gray zone between those two ends of a spectrum.
Well, can I just get all of your take then? I'll start with Dr. Greenberg. You brought up the Times piece and what the Trump administration is thinking about making changes in terms of how the law, different departments, whether they do or do not recognize transgender as essentially in existence. And essentially, I think it sounds like they do not accept that transgender is a real thing. So what do you make of that?
I wish I knew what to make of a lot of things coming out of the administration. But what I can say is that the statement reads as though to erase transgender people and their experience. It reads as though to erase intersex people and their experience and existence. And I was pleased to see the Times piece quote the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association. My guiding group, the American Academy of Pediatrics, just came out this month with a very nicely written statement that would state the opposite of the new new potential HHS guideline.
Okay, Rowan.
I would agree with Dr. Greenberg. It was I think a shock at all times when you are your identity as an individual is continually pushed back on. And I understood everyone's I think immediate emotional response of like I'm being erased, but it. If anything, just reminded me that there's literally no potential to erase a person when it comes to language. I mean, the language exists, people exist, the transgender community is around, it is strong and vibrant, and it's not a new thing. It's been around for millennia at this point with different language and different words and understanding. But I think that, again, that sort of message of we won't even consider you as your full self was damaging on a personal level, as well as looking at what that could be legally, state level, federal level, local level, and what impact that's going to have.
Okay, Penny.
Oh, there's so many things. I can't speak to the medical other than I know who I am and I know what I am, and having someone legislate this out is impossible because I will always be this. I was transgender for 50 years before I admitted it. I expected to die transgender. As far as what's coming out of the Trump White House, I look at this from a performance base, and what he's doing is he's playing to his crowd. Transgender people are a really easy target, a really good way to get his base mobilized. I just read a piece of this one man who spends a lot of time in right-wing social media groups and spaces talking about the fact that we're wanted dead. When they ask questions about the bathroom issue, where should we go? And the overwhelming response was, they should all die. So he's playing to that. He's playing to that sort of red meat thing. That is the only lens through this that this makes sense to me, is that's what he's doing. He's willing to sacrifice lives for votes.
Amy?
Yeah, that's the same thing. I come from the same perspective that I know what my lived experience is, and I can't be legislated, policied out of existence. And that's where I know I'm. And thankfully, we do live in New York, and we'll talk about New York probably in a little bit more detail later. But, we have a lot of great support here in the state, a lot of great support here in Rochester. And without that, I think a lot of trans people would be lost. And I know people in other parts of the country that are lost because they don't have that support there within the community. And I think Penny hit it right on the head. This is something to stir up the base 2 weeks before the primary, because I think they're looking ahead saying, we see the blue wave coming. What can we do to mobilize our troops? And, we are the easy target.
Yeah. Who are the scary people to point at?
Yeah.
Well, Rowan, I think as Amy points to the state level, There is a legislation called GENDA, G-E-N-D-A, and it's come up on this program. It's come up a lot in our community lately. Let's just start with the outline of what it is and how you view it, its relative importance. Go ahead.
Sure. So GENDA, like you said, G-E-N-D-A, is the Gender Expression Nondiscrimination Act. This is a law that would, if passed by our Senate and then signed into law by Governor Cuomo, having passed the Assembly first or any governor thereafter, would essentially provide protections for transgender and gender nonconforming New Yorkers when it comes to employment, housing, public accommodation, education, all sorts of other things that many other protected classes within the state of New York have under our Bill of Civil Rights. So when it comes to sexual orientation or race or ethnicity or religion or medical diagnosis and things like that, those things are protected under New York state law. As it stands right now, New York as a state kind of has a patchwork of protections. We don't have anything comprehensive on the books. We do have an executive order from Governor Cuomo that was issued about 3 years ago at this point, but we don't have anything that covers everybody.
Is that executive order enough?
Well, it's doing its job now. But as we know, and as folks may not know, when it comes to an executive order, I mean, if Governor Cuomo were to vacate his office at any point or potentially not run for re-election and the next person who came in didn't want that on the books anymore, it's gone.
Well, so let's talk about what State Senator Rich Funke said on this program yesterday about that exact point. And here's the context of what you're about to hear. I brought up the fact that a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was through the University of Rochester Medical Center, there was a community forum with four state Senate candidates, and Senator Funke was included, and said at that forum that he thinks that individuals should be respected, but when it comes to take the quote-unquote bathroom issue, that they ought to use the bathroom to which their biology corresponds. And so when I brought that up with him, to say, I kind of just said, look, I want to understand where you are on understanding and thinking about legislation as it pertains to transgender Americans. And we talked about GENDA and why he thinks GENDA is not necessary. And here are some of his thoughts about that. Let's listen.
Well, first of all, when it comes to all of that, in our state, the governor has passed executive orders to make certain that it is effective law that people are not discriminated against in housing, not discriminated against in their jobs. This is an executive order. So people, when they talk about the gender legislation, so much of that is unnecessary now because the governor has effectively put this into place. I think the only problem, and I've always said to everybody, everybody deserves your respect, all God's children, as far as I'm concerned. The only hang up that some people have is about the locker room issue. And so, how comfortable would you feel in a locker room setting, if your kids were in a locker room setting, if somebody came in who, was male in a female locker room or female in a male locker room, how would that make you feel as a parent? And that's what a lot of people have a hang up about. And how do we address that?
Do you have a hang up about that?
Well, certainly I'm concerned about that. I think anybody, who's a parent would. And that's what I hear about from my constituents, frankly. I mean, that's a lot of what we hear from them as well. That's an issue. The bathroom setting is not as much of an issue.
It's locker room and not
stall.
Bathroom?
It's more locker room and a more open circumstance, If you're in a bathroom, you've got a stall you can go into.
But you're saying this is an issue for parents who are concerned about kids?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, as a parent, it doesn't bother me. It's not a concern that I have.
Mm-hmm.
What is the solution then? In your mind, the solution would be if you have physical biology, that will tell you where you need to be in a locker room?
In my mind right now, because the governor of the state of New York has issued an executive order, there is no issue. There is no issue. These circumstances have been taken care of.
That is State Senator Rich Funke on the program yesterday. A lot of nodding from you, Rowan, so I'll start with you.
I think I'm nodding along. These are things that I've heard over the years. I mean, I've spent about 6 or 7 years of my young adulthood as the education coordinator over at the Out Alliance, answering and hearing these very same concerns from folks. I think that when it comes to talking about the transgender community and accommodations, as it were, and equal access is really what it is. the issue of bathrooms and locker rooms come up continuously, and they continue to come up. And I think that it's almost somewhat irresponsible to be furthering these misconceptions and stereotypes about the transgender community in agreeing that, yes, of course, I would be concerned if my child was in the same bathroom or locker room as a transgender individual, because that helps to equate the transgender community with sexual predators, with criminals, with people who are only have the worst intentions in mind, when in fact, in the states that do have equal access bathroom and locker room policies on the books, there have never been any recorded instance of a transgender individual acting inappropriately. In fact, what actually happens is the transgender individuals are the most vulnerable and at risk for violence in those situations. So I think that I see where people come from when they're concerned about that, because the larger narrative around the transgender community is that we are dangerous. And if that's the only narrative you've ever been exposed to, of course, you would be rightly concerned. But I really think that folks need to dig in and learn more about the communities around them and see that the transgender community is this is just another community of people. So I would absolutely rebut what Senator Funke said around that. But I also disagree with his assertion that because we have an executive order, it's all done and dusted and we can all pack up and go home, because we know that executive orders don't have, a permanent stand. They could be there for a really long time, but we actually have no idea, and having something permanently on the books through the Senate is the really the right step in the right direction.
I'll go around the table. Penny, what did you make of what you heard?
Oh, my goodness. In a previous life, I worked in television sports, and I've actually worked with Rich Funke back when he was doing sports. And to hear him say these things, it just boggles my mind. You're worried about your child in a locker room because of transgender people. How do you feel about coaches, Rich? Jerry Sandusky, he wasn't transgender. If you wanted to look and actually see how many people in power, men, have done exactly what you're afraid transgender people will be doing, you would be railing against coaches and uncles and stepfathers and fathers and brothers and sisters, but none of that comes out. It's the people that you think might do it that you're looking at, and that is only stoking fears that don't need to be done that way. And I'm a parent. I have four children. As soon as my oldest child became old enough to actually start being in the world by himself and looking to people, I started doing research about what the nature of sexual predators are. And they're the one, and it's Jerry Sandusky. It's those sorts of people who insinuate themselves and look normal and are doing these things and just have a take an interest. I don't want to get into that, because that's not the nature of this show. But he's just throwing red meat out, and it's an insult to me as a parent to have him think that he's speaking for parents everywhere by saying things like this.
Well, let me add, before I turn to Amy and Dr. Greenberg, we had limited time with Senator Funke, and there was a lot to get to. I'm not sure I handled that as well as I could have, because time's really moving, and every phone line is filled up. I did feel compelled to say, not as an advocate, but just as a journalist, but also just as a member of the community, and as a parent, I don't have that fear, and I think it's important, to recognize why we have that fear. And what I didn't ask him, and I like Rich personally, and I always appreciate the time from Senator Funke on this program, is what exactly the fear is. What's the fear of what will happen is what I maybe don't fully
understand. Conflating transgender people with sexual predators, especially with child molestation.
Right. I certainly understand that, Penny. I think what I think it would be productive is to have Senator Funke join a conversation, a roundtable discussion like this, and just walk through and say, is that a realistic fear? What about it? What's going through your mind about what you think could happen when you really think it out and play out these scenarios? Is it really happening? Are there other dangers that are actually real and present that we could be more concerned about in the world? So I try to always ascribe good intentions to people who have concerns. I think what I heard from Rowan is a frustration, it sounds like, because what Rowan is saying is, look, these fears, these concerns about bathrooms and locker rooms have been there for so long now that for a person in a legislative leadership position, I think you used the word irresponsible, to continue to peddle the fear without trying to address it. Have you spoken to Senator Funke? Has he come to the Out Alliance? Has he said, look, I'm hearing from constituents, these fears are out there. I think these are fears in good faith, but can we continue to address them? Have you had those conversations?
Well, we have not. As far as I know, his office has not been in touch with our organization, at least during my tenure with the Alliance, nor have we had a visit from him within our center, our resource and community center, which have been open on College Ave for the last 3 years. I think we would be very open, and we always are open, to anyone, whether they are holding a political position or just a member of the community who want to learn a little bit more. I'm always open to have those conversations, and our doors are open to whoever wants to walk in.
Okay. And as I turn to Amy and Dr. Greenberg, again, make sure you understand, you know, as we go forward and you hear GENDA, it's the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, and Senator Funke didn't say whether he would, what I did also didn't ask him is, if there was no executive order, would you support GENDA? So I don't know the answer. But what his contention is, we've got the executive order, we're good here. And what Roan is pointing out is an executive order from a governor can be rescinded by the next governor. And that's why the trans community is in particular really concerned about what the future holds for the law in this state. Amy, what do you make of what you heard?
I go back to the bathroom stuff as well. And I'm a parent as well. And as soon as my children were of age and start changing in the locker room facilities, we had that conversation as responsible adults with our children, had that age-appropriate conversation, not only about the locker room, but sex and gender and all those topics. And those are regular things that we talk about and we're very open with. And one of the amazing things that when we started hearing back from our oldest is most of the kids, at least, you know, they change in the stalls. They don't want to be seen. They don't want to be out in public. They don't want to be vulnerable, even as, you know, straight cis children. They want that privacy. And so the boogeyman argument of, you know, the trans kid is going to be the predator is just false.
Yeah, I mean, I have an email, Amy, from a listener already saying, well, how should we handle non-trans bad actors? You know, someone who, a cis man wants to say he's trans in order to get into the women's room. What should we do about it? I mean, Dr. Grimmer is looking at me saying, let me answer that one.
Well, I have many thoughts about bathrooms. I spend too much of my clinical time talking about bathrooms because, frankly, as a pediatrician, the youth that I see are much more likely to be in danger in bathrooms than to ever be a source of danger to their peers. My children, the youth in my practice, have felt like they had to carry weapons in bathrooms, have been threatened in bathrooms, have been threatened with victimization in bathrooms, or actually victimized in bathrooms. That's a thing, but it's on behalf of the transgender youth who need protecting. There are not cisgender men saying that they're women to use the bathrooms and be a bad actor. And there are bad actors, as Penny pointed out, the majority of whom are cisgender people, right? There are no mm-hmm. recorded instances of bad right. acting in that sense from transgender people. And so that's my thought about that. And as a parent, I also hope that I am raising a generation of children, and I also am really heartened by what I hear from young people, sort of cis, trans, or otherwise, who don't have those fears or concerns. So I wonder what, for parents who say they're worried about their children, I wonder if their children are actually worried, or if, as I hope, we're raising a generation of young people for whom these are non-issues, because they do understand that their transgender peers are people. And from a agenda perspective, I would just say that I've had an anxious week all week in clinic. My patients have been deeply concerned about what they're hearing from the federal government. And it is an ideal time for New York State, as we've done under Governor Cuomo, but from a legislative perspective, to double down and say, we are proactively protecting transgender people. Mm-hmm. This is an ideal time for New York to say, this is who we are and this is what we value.
Any thoughts on Senator Funke and his concerns as a parent himself, not just for his constituents that he's representing? What would you say to Senator Funke?
I would say talk to your kids. I would say ask your kids what their experiences have been with their transgender peers and with transgender people, because I very much doubt that they have those same fears. And to point out that those fears have been stoked by really well-organized conservative campaigns across the country. So the fact that bathroom legislation popped up left, right, and center, and that these are the fears that people have, is not a coincidence. It's a part of this much larger trend of fake news, and I'm using air quotes, which is not good on radio, but of false information, of deliberate misinformation that's being spread with a calculated sort of political and social agenda.
If there is an underlying issue here with parents, I think it might be that seeing somebody who is transgender will somehow infect their child, as opposed to what would more accurately be the truth, that if there is a child there who has some questions or knows that he or she is transgender might be more emboldened to actually act on that.
Let me get Linda in Rochester on the subject of our kids. Go ahead, Linda.
I listened to your show every day on my lunch hour, but yesterday's with Rich Funke had me upset, and I'm no longer shocked by our administration, but I'm saddened and I'm angry. You know, 50 years ago, 30 years ago even, they talked about integrating schools, and parents were like, oh my God, my children are so afraid. And I thought, my God, what are you teaching them that they are? And then it was the concept that anyone who was gay had to be a pedophile. And it was like, God, everyone knows better than that. Why are you teaching your children this? And now I hear this about this locker room stuff. And it's the same thing. What are you teaching your children that there should be a fear? Because if you're transgender, statistically, you are not a pedophile. So it's this unrealistic fear that people have. And I don't think it's their children. It's their own negative feelings that they're projecting, and it's so upsetting to me. So I just had to vent.
Linda, what do you think we do about that? If your construction is true, what do we do about it?
We have to get parents to get better educate themselves so they can teach their children to be the open-minded that they are not. I mean, the first time I took my girls when they were little to a pride parade, and my daughter was like, oh, mommy, those ladies are so pretty. And then I had the talk with her, and I explained everything. And it's what they grew up with, and they've now marched in pride parades. And it's, you know, it's what you teach your children. And there's too much negativity and too much narrow-mindedness based not on facts. It's being spread to kids now, and it scares me.
Okay, well, Linda, thank you for the phone call. I know Amy wanted to weigh in on some of what you heard. Go ahead, Amy.
One of the things, the misconception in the far right would have you believe that we are sexual predators. But let me tell you a little secret from my personal experience, because since I've started hormone replacement therapy, I don't have a sexual drive. It's not there. It can't be turned on like it was before. That's why Jerry Sandusky is much more of a danger in those type of figures than anybody in my community as a trans person that I've ran into.
Your own sexual drive was impacted by medication?
Correct.
Is that common, Dr. Greenberg?
Yeah. Yes. Sorry, I'm not Dr. Greenberg, but I can tell you also from firsthand experience, yes. It is very much the testosterone is a really powerful drug. And it is an overwhelming thing in the bodies of children, and there is very little attention being spent to teach young men and boys how to handle this. And I recognized that as soon as I had an orchiectomy, so I just completely eliminated the problem, and I realized all of a sudden that all of these this underlying aggression that I had was gone. It most certainly affected the way I look at having testosterone. Certainly affected the way I looked at the world, and very little work is being done with that.
And Dr. Greenberg, when we talk about misconceptions the trans community faces, to the extent that the idea, the stereotype of a transgender individual as someone who is either dangerous or overly sexualized, is it important to point out that, and again, transgender individuals, it's a wide range of experience and decision-making, transition or not, sort of self-expression in different ways, and I want to acknowledge that. But for those going in terms of a medication route, is it important to understand that this idea of this overly sexualized, dangerous individual is actually medically probably less sexualized?
Yeah, it's just not what we're going for. When I start people on hormones, I say we're not going for roid rage, right? Similarly, we're not going for this sort of hypersexual drive. We're going for normal physiologic levels that will help your body do what it needs to do to feel congruent with your sense of self. Mm-hmm. And so I also deal with younger people, and parents will come back and say, oh, it's definitely the hormones. I'm like, well, it could be the hormones. It could also be the teenage thing. And so we have a lot of conversations about, as Penny pointed out, kids and youth have lots of things changing in their bodies. And so when we add cross-gender hormones to that mix for carefully selected patients with lots of other sort of safety rails and things in place, we talk about what's sort of normal development and what's the hormones. And my phrase is, we're not going for roid rage. If you tell me it's because of your hormones, we're going to check your levels and see what's going on there, right?
Okay, Rowan?
Well, I think it's also important to recognize that a large chunk of the transgender community in their kind of cross-hormone therapy are now taking testosterone at higher levels than they were before. So we're talking about transgender men or non-binary individuals who wish to present as such. And so I think, you know, as important as it is to recognize what an impact it has on a biological sense, so much of it is also the way that we're raised and the way that we are supported by our families, by our social groups, by our communities. You know, just this simple act of introducing testosterone to the body does not make somebody a monster. It doesn't make them aggressive. It doesn't make them a sexual predator. And that goes for cisgender boys and men as well. It is so much around the accountability and the understanding of who you are as a person, what your boundaries are, what your responsibility is to yourself and your own community. So I think that that's a very, very, very key aspect of how people learn to find their place in our world and in our community.
Yeah, that I would like to... I don't want to like make kind of say walking back, but to clarify, I don't think that this is what's happening. What I'm saying is that there's very little discussion about the proper way to act as a man in the world, and that most of that is happening. And then that's where that's the stem of the Me Too movement is coming from. That is just a reaction to that, you know, allowed wildness in boys and men.
Okay. I'm going to get a phone call from Kevin in Fairport next. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, Evan, I've been to the dentist, so please excuse me.
Okay.
I'm a contractor for years. I'm a middle-aged guy living with my middle-aged wife. Okay. And as far as running contracts, some of my best clients have been gay couples, alternative lifestyles, transgenders. I have no issue with them. I don't care. It's great to me. It's just my feeling, in all due respect, that they have a bigger issue dealing with themselves than my straight self has dealing with them. I just wish there could be a point where you don't have to be in my face about what you are or who you want to be. I don't care. I just think you could deal better with yourselves without accusing me of being an Archie Bunker, a meathead. And as far as raising young boys and how to control their testosterone, that boys are going to be boys, and this world still needs men. I'm sorry. But I got bigger issues raising sons and grandsons than to how they're going to emotionally handle you. I'm not going to have them pick on you or make fun or belittle you. But once again, that's your issue to deal with, to get over, to deal with yourself. That's all.
So, Kevin, let me just...
God bless you all.
Okay. And let me just ask you a quick question, if I could, before you go here. When you say that you think they have more of an issue, you know, with themselves than maybe
yes.
Okay,
yes.
So you do have a presidential administration that may want to define them in terms of legal terms, as essentially not really being real or existing. Do you think that's a concern?
Look, at the end of the day, Evan, when you come out the womb, if you have a penis, you're a boy. End of story.
Okay.
Done. Now then, that is their issue. I don't care what they think or want to do or want to be. I don't care. It's fine with me. At the end of the day, when you come out the womb, you got a penis, boy.
All right, Kevin, I got to jump in here. I mean, I take the point. I think we've heard that before. So apart from the last part, let me turn to Amy, because Amy was signaling during some of Kevin's comments there. When Kevin is saying, well, the trans community has more of an issue with itself than the rest of the world does with the trans community, unfortunately, Kevin's last comment sort of betrays that. But setting that all that aside, let me ask you about your experience, because Amy, life has changed for you.
It's changing drastically, and it will continue to. And as a trans person out in the public space, I see the sideway looks. I see the sneers.
You do.
I see the cross-eyed glances. Most of the people, and I can deal with that. I can put up with that. And I've been confronted by people in public.
You have already. What did they say?
And it's just making fun of you, giving you a hard, hey, sir. And it's It's embarrassing. It's done to intimidate you, and it's done to make you second guess yourself.
Do they do it in a way that is laughing at you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was done mocking. And you know what? And I appreciate Kevin. You know, at least he's honest in saying where he is and where he's at. And he's, you know what? Fine. Kevin's, I appreciate that. You know what? You're going to let me live my life. I want that same respect back from society, and that's all that I'm really asking for you. If you're religious, conservative, great, you live your life, but let me do the same thing. But I see in a lot of society, the scariest thing to very religious conservatives is a happy, well-adjusted LGBTQ community, because we upset their whole definitions of what gender and family are. And that's where the animosity comes in, because when we're well-adjusted and operating within society, We're not the boogie person anymore,
Penny. And I'll echo what Amy had to say. Kevin, I'm glad you called. It's important that we air out all kinds of perspectives, and they are all welcome here as we continue to try to understand one another. Go ahead, Penny.
Earlier in this week, I was actually on a podcast with the Rochester Business Journal, talking about this issue. And one of the questions that was asked at me to me at the end was, "What can businesses do to help the transgender community?" And my immediate response was, "Believe us." And that's really all it comes down to, is believe us when we say we are who we are. And if we get past that, if we get that legislation is important and needs to be done, because not enough people believe us. And so that's, but the bottom line is that, do you want to help us? Just believe us when we say this is who we are, and this is what we want, and this is, and also this is not who we are.
I have a couple of emails on that very subject, which I'm going to get to in a moment. You mentioned the Rochester Business Journal. They apologized to the community for a cartoon that they ran recently that mocked transgender individuals, mm-hmm. and they published an apology to our community. I'll just quote a little bit from that. They wrote, quote, "The cartoon that ran in the Friday, October 19th issue of the Rochester Business Journal should never have been published. We take full responsibility and apologize for our mistake. It does not reflect the views of this publication or its staff. We do not condone racist or hateful content in any way and are very sorry for running this offensive cartoon. This is not what we stand for. We take this matter very seriously and are putting new processes in place to ensure this never happens again." That's part of the apology from the Rochester Business Journal. Rowan, was that sufficient for you? How did you feel about that?
Well, in an effort of all transparency, we had been in communication with the editorial team at the Rochester Business Journal since Tuesday when it came to our attention, right before it kind of blew up on social media. And I expressed the same concern with their editor-in-chief, that I think that what the community was really looking for was the explanation of the process. How did this happen in the first place, and what is it actually going to look like moving forward? We've had good conversation there with them since that apology came out around what next steps can look like and how we may be able to help facilitate those things. But I think that some of the larger I guess acrimony was around, you know, how did this happen? Whose eyes did this go through? How many people saw this? How did it get to you in the first place? And what do those new processes look like? I mean, if nothing else, I feel good knowing that the cartoon did not originate from Rochester, and it is a syndicated piece. You know, obviously there's nothing that can be done to take it away or undo the damage that it's already done. But I think that amount of transparency moving forward would be incredibly helpful.
And let me ask Rowan and Dr. Greenberg on the last part of Kevin's comments. You know, Rowan, this is what you do as someone who is I use the word expert very carefully, but you're an expert in communication with the community because you do it in school settings, you do it in business mm-hmm. settings, you do it in rural settings, you do it in urban settings, you do it all across our community. And you've heard that a lot. And you've heard that sometimes in mocking, derisive tones, mm-hmm. as Amy was describing hearing about in sort of public settings. Mm-hmm. And you hear it in good faith, confused tones where people are really trying to understand.
Absolutely.
So what's the message for someone like Kevin who views things the way that as he described there?
That's a tall order. Well, I mean, I echo kind of what Amy was saying as well, that I thank Kevin for being honest and upfront about how he feels about these things. And I think it would be difficult in, you know, a minute or even 15 minutes to try and help to undo some of the education that has been placed on the vast majority of our country. We're all taught in our school system that there's two sexes and there's male and female, XX and XY, and that's it. And we move on. And you never touch it again unless you go into the medical field in some way or another. I didn't. So that's all the education that I got within the public schools of New York. I think that it really, it comes down to wanting to understand people better. You know, when we say, well, this is just how it is, we've put up a kind of a barrier between ourselves and other people that doesn't allow us to learn or grow. And even to understand that maybe some of the things that we've known for a really long time may be wrong, that maybe someone didn't tell us the whole truth when we were younger, even in their best efforts, and they didn't know that they weren't telling the whole truth either because we didn't understand the whole truth at the time. But I think kind of coming to recognize that some of the things that we've learned as small children, even coming from people that we love, like our parents or our teachers or our friends, may not actually be the full truth. And that kind of being open and vulnerable enough to learn and listen to other people can be very helpful.
Okay, Dr. Greenberg?
Well, I would just say that when parents and families come into my office with a young person who's expressing a transgender identity or thinking about these things, we spend a lot of time on those conversations. We spend a lot of time talking to parents who feel just the way Kevin does. Mm-hmm. This is my lived experience, and it's that my body and my brain match, and therefore my body determines my sense of self. And for people for whom that's their lived experience, it's really hard to understand how it could be different for someone else, right? And so we spend a ton of time just explaining that gender identity and biology are not always the same thing. And that while that is your experience, we have to really tease apart some of the strands of things that have been woven together incorrectly for you. And that that's different from then your child or your loved one's lived experience. Having other people appreciate that gender is diverse is a big part of the academic mission and the educational mission that I bring every place I'm asked to come, and including to patients and families.
Well, one of our listeners writes to say, can the pediatrician, Dr. Greenberg, address at what age she will start treatment and explain her reasoning?
I think that going deeply into our medical treatment protocols is probably beyond the scope of this conversation. Just to say that we see patients and families who start to express these thoughts and feelings from very young ages through age 25. So our clinical services are essentially sort of puberty through age 25. There are no permanent or damaging medical interventions that happen to the youngest patients that we see. We don't damage any of our patients, to just clarify that language. But it's a careful and considered process that, as I alluded to in that first statement, always involves patients and families, always involves schools, always involves faith communities where that's important to a young person coming into my care. So it's a really holistic model that does start when young people first start to express these feelings, which can be as young as 3 or 5, but without medical intervention until all of these carefully selected and carefully thought out steps have been achieved.
I also want to, in a moment, I want to return to Amy kind of describing her experience as Amy has made this transition in living publicly as herself in a moment, because part of the goal of the program today is to understand experience and understand misconception. Before we do that, just let me get a couple more listener comments and try to just sort through a couple. MC says, it's somewhat hypocritical to defend the desires of transgender people while delegitimizing the discomfort of straight people. The reality is that the laws are addressing changing social norms in a physical world not designed for this. Laws should be geared towards the design and availability of bathrooms, et cetera. And everyone should realize that these transitions will take time. From MC. Rowan?
I mean, I would agree that, of course, this will take time. Everything does. Things move much slower on a grand scale than they ever do on the small scale. Folks are always ready to do things that are just not doable. But I think, you know, recognizing that, yes, we do have a world that is not was not built for and is not at the very present moment completely ready for a section of our population, for my community. But that doesn't mean that we can't push it to be more ready. I think accepting that, well, it doesn't fit right now, so we'll just have to wait. What progress comes from that? So I absolutely would agree that, yes, it takes time, but I think we can push things faster. And also recognizing that the transgender and the straight community are not two mutually exclusive groups, because when we're talking about the transgender community, when we say transgender, we're talking about gender identity, which is completely separate from sexual orientation. So there are straight transgender people. If we want to say non-LGBTQ or straight and cisgender, that absolutely can make that distinction there. But I think it is important that we don't conflate gender identity and sexual orientation.
Okay. Alex writes to us and says, Senator Funke's position doesn't make sense. We don't need to pass gender because it's already de facto law through an executive order. But if we pass it, then all of a sudden bathrooms and locker rooms won't be safe. Where is the evidence students are or would be sneaking into those bathrooms? And again, evidence is lacking in that in that regard. Alex, I appreciate the email there. Mary writes to us and says, hi, Evan. Can your guests say what they think about kids who think they're trans who are not actually trans? That's from Mary.
This sounds like the rapid onset gender dysphoria line that I've heard a lot of. And there was a very poorly researched article in The Atlantic about this that only it's kind of akin to the anti-vaxxers, in my view, that there is a very small yes, there are some children who have adverse reactions to vaccines, but the overwhelming evidence is that they are so much that vaccines are so much better for our children. There may be some that are like that. The overwhelming evidence is that that's not the case. And the only person that I know who detransitioned, actually retransitioned later on in her life, and the detransitioning was not because of anything internal, but because of the pressure that she was facing from her peers and the people that she knew.
Okay. The panel think that sums it up pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a small subsection of an already fairly small percentage of folks. To be honest, I mean, kids explore and they express themselves differently. And I think that, and Dr. Greenberg, again, jump in if I'm wrong here, but I think so much of the psychological and the medical community is looking at just giving these children space to explore who they are. And when they come on that very concrete understanding, to give them that support. And so, of course, there may be one or two every 5 years who decide, actually, this wasn't really for me. Thank you so much for the space and the time to explore. But the vast majority of kids who are looking at like this consistent, insistent and persistent idea of themselves from like the time that they're able to formulate words, we've got to be able to take them seriously, and we have to be able to listen to those children, whether that's coming from them at 3 or whether it's coming from them at 7.
Just briefly, Dr. Greenberg, you agree there?
I absolutely agree, and it's important that people understand. Someone asked about treatment protocols. Again, that's kind of beyond the scope of this radio show, but it really is. It's acknowledging where people are. It's believing young people when they say who they are and how they feel about their gender, and then giving them safety with their families, with themselves at school to explore. And not every young person who expresses a cross-gender identity, that's the term, is going to be persistently, insistently, and consistently transgender. It would be a fallacy to say that every young person who says this is, you know, inexorably headed towards long-term transition, but it's about giving them space and safety and believing them. Mm-hmm. It's about believing young people and allowing them a safe way to, with their families, with their communities, with healthcare providers, figure out what the right next steps are.
I want to ask Amy just a little bit more about your own experience, because again, as you said, when you are living as yourself in public, you've already experienced some mocking, things like that. I'm wondering if you're concerned about whether living as yourself will impact work.
That's, I think, my biggest concern is, you know, I can handle some mocking, I can handle some insults and putting up with some stuff in the public space, that's fine. But, you know, having a family and having, you know, a home and needs that need to be met and bills like everybody else, you know, if I ever got to the point of a full-time transition, and that's my biggest concern is what happens to me in the workplace, because I have a public-facing type of job. And so I need to be able to still support my family. I need to be able to support myself. And that's, so it's interesting that my biggest fear about transition isn't the other party. It's me being able to provide for my family, my well-being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's my big fear.
And Rowan, the law does or does not protect Amy's job in terms of firing on the basis of her identity.
That's the tricky part, and that's where we get to the patchwork. So yes, the executive order in many ways does protect. It gives more deference towards public employees, so folks who work for the state or local governments. Within the city of Rochester, we've had an ordinance of protection since 2000, which is we were the first city in the state to put that in place and one of the first cities in the whole country to do that. The town of Brighton has passed policy legislation as well. But, you know, if we don't have this larger law in place, you know, if Amy were to be transferred to a job, for example, in the North Country or places in the Southern Tier, or even places in Central New York, who don't have that very strong language within their city law, within their county legislation, oftentimes private business owners are often allowed a little more leeway when it comes to employment discrimination.
Well, as we get ready to close the program, let me just ask Rowan to let our audience know from your work as communications director at the Ad Alliance, you've done so much educational work. There's this idea that, well, you know, it's 2018. Are there really misconceptions about trans? Do people really? Obviously, yes. Whether it's at the federal level, whether it's at the legal level, whether it's at legislatively, whether it's, you know, Amy's going out to the mall just to go shopping and bumps into people who are, yes, there are misconceptions. Mm-hmm. But for people really of good faith who are still trying and have open mind and want to understand more, and I think that's most of us, mm-hmm. you urge them to call you. Can they call you, and how do you learn more?
I think it's reaching out. It's taking that big step to say, I may not know everything about this that I thought I did, or maybe there is more for me to learn. And I think all of us, regardless of our identities, can benefit from learning from other people. I would absolutely encourage folks to get in touch with resource centers like the Out Alliance, with Mocha, even with Trillium, but also reaching out to their friends and neighbors. There are trans people in every single community, in every single town, every single neighborhood we exist, places. You may not know that we're there, but we are, and so being very very kind and respectful of that and learning more is always the best thing we can do.
Out Alliance online where?
Outalliance.org and on Facebook.
Thanks for being here.
Absolutely, thank you.
It's always nice to have you. And Dr. Kate Greenberg, Director of Gender Health Services at UR Medicine Scalasana Children's Hospital, always nice to have you as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amy Stevens.
Thank you.
Nice to have you, and good luck to you. Thank you for being here. Penny Sterling, I know we'll see you soon. Thank you very much. Always nice to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Short break. More connections coming up.